You're listening to KYRS 88.1 and 92.3 FM. It's Federica and Stella on the show. So did you hear? Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the air.
Hi, everyone.
So it is me and Stella and two lovely guests in the studio today. I'm so excited. Before we like jump into it today, I just realized that at the time that this is airing, it's mid or late May. What is it like? It's like the middle late. Let's go with mid late May.
Yeah.
Stella has just about a month left here with us, which is making me so sad.
Yeah, I'm so sad too. I know.
It's been so fun having you on the air, and it's like we just have had such good conversations. So it's a delight to be here with Stella and our two lovely guests today, who will I'll be introducing here in a second. But before I do, just a really quick announcement as well about the show. So I'm just kind of throwing this out there after having you on the air, Stella. I even realized that I've really enjoyed having a co-host on the air. So if being on the air is something that you're interested in and you like my show and you'd be interested in co-hosting, that's a conversation that I'm leaving open. This is, you know, to anybody listening, if you're a KYRS listener or not, I'm curious to hear from you. So you can reach out to me at sodidyouhear@kyrs.org. Stella, I would never want to replace you. I'm going to be so sad that you're leaving. But yeah, it's been really great having a co-host. So it's an opportunity that I want to extend further.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So May is also Asian American Heritage Month. It is just Asian Heritage Month or Asian American Heritage Month or how we want to label it in 2024. But I have as my guest Tia Mua. She is the community engagement organizer for Asians for Collective Liberation in Spokane. And we had another guest from the organization on not too long ago. So it's really cool to welcome the organization back on the air. And as part of their program an event that they're launching this weekend, they are having the lovely Kalia. Do you want to be introduced by your full name? Or
Kao Kalia Yang is good, and then just call me Kalia after.
Awesome. So her full name, Kao Kalia Yang, but likes to go by Kalia, which I found out means like dimples.
Yes.
Your smiling dimples are just, I think it's so cute. And she is a Hmong American teacher, speaker, and writer. Her work crosses audiences and genres. She is the award-winning author of the memoirs, The Late Homecomer, The Song Poet, Somewhere in the Unknown World, and Where Rivers Part. She is the author of this book called The Rock in My Throat, which is also beautifully illustrated by, Jemay Lin. And she is going to be in Spokane this weekend for her book talk. And there's going to be a lot of workshops around the book, and it's going to be an amazing experience. So welcome, Tia and Kalia. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
It's delightful to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you guys. It's going to be, I'm really excited and curious to hear about your stories. So just to recap, Tia, can you tell us a little bit more about the Asians for Collective Liberation organization here in Spokane, what you guys do, because I know I've had you guys on the air, but, you know, just a little quick little recap, because you guys do so much.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to share about what we do at ACL Spokane. So we used to be APIC Spokane, the Asian Pacific Islander Coalition, and we recently rebranded last year to honor the disaggregation that we want to keep pushing forward, to say that, you know, it's important to recognize the historical, linguistic, and cultural differences between Asians and Pacific Islanders. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're now Asians for Collective Liberation in Spokane. We do a lot of really fun things. We have two main program pillars. So we have civic engagement, and then we also have health and wellness. So under our health and wellness programs, we have things like Boba Buddies, where We just hang out with kids over boba, learn about different Asian cultures, play games and do arts and crafts. And then we also have different things like a book club and cooking classes that are all free. So it's really fun to just build community in that way and to really get to know our community in that way. Also, with our civic engagement work, then we do some lobbying. We fight for policies and advocate for the needs and more resources for our Asian and Asian American community here in Spokane. Of course, always with that frame of mind of thinking of collective liberation, what's going to help uplift all of us together.
Beautiful. And from what I understand, you invited Kalia to be here for this event this weekend. And Kalia, you know, you have a long story of, you know, success as a writer. Give us a little introduction about who you are and, you know, what brings you here today.
I was born in a refugee camp in Thailand among Americans, so me and Tia are part of the same diaspora.
Yeah.
You know, in the wake of the Vietnam War, the Central Intelligence Agency was also waging an illegal war in Laos, a secret war that decimated our people. There was a movement toward genocide. Khao San Pathet Lao, the leading communist paper, declared, "It is necessary to extirpate down to the root the Hmong minority." Big trucks came. They loaded up men and boys, the women and girls that find them like fallen fruit on the jungle floor. So our families are the lucky ones to escape that genocide. You know, for every one of us walking, two others died so we could be here. My family was resettled in Minnesota. I was 6 years old and we came, and all I knew was A, B, and C. I still remember a teacher saying, "Say your ABCs," and I say, "A, B, and C." And she says, "No, say all of them." And all I can do is repeat A, B, and C. And she shakes her head and she says, "We have to put you here in the first grade anyway." Mm. You know, but that is the story of my beginning and so many of the Hmong American beginnings. We come from a war. But as my father, a poet in the Hmong tradition, likes to remind me and my siblings, we are not children of war, poverty, and despair. We are hope being born, the captains to more beautiful futures. And so in many ways, my life has been an effort to live up to those words. I'm one of the first nationally distributed Hmong American writers in the land. I write about the Hmong American experiences for adults and children. We hope, we hurt, we dream in this world. And so that is a big part of my work. And I was honored when the invitation came. Usually I'm invited by universities to give lectures about the craft of nonfiction writing or memoir, but this time, because of a picture book, you know, with a Washington-based illustrator, G. May Lin, and it was such a lovely call to come that I had to say yes immediately, so I'm here for the weekend.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you here, and it's pretty amazing to be sitting right next to, like, an icon in the Hmong American community, and you're just a huge inspiration to me, so it's super nice to just be sharing space with you.
Same. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you guys on my show and sharing your stories. You know, it sounds like there's so much of this conversation could go so many interesting ways. And, you know, I have so many questions already, but I'll, you know, kind of start with the basics. So, you were really brought together by your kind of identities as Hmong Americans and the desire to share your story and uplift your communities in each of your respective ways. So and that's, if what I'm understanding right, is really what drew you together here, which I think is beautiful. And you know, just to kind of give some general background information, who are the Hmong in Asia, and then I, you know, want to move on to some questions about who are they here in the United States. You know, how does your community show up here in, you know, however you want to take that?
You know, we're an ethnic minority. There is no Hmong land written in the map of a bigger world, as my grandmother used to say to me. But there's this mountain that she climbs, Hmong Mountain, and there she can open and access the house of her youth and everybody who began in those high mountaintops in Laos. You know, we were originally from the lowlands of China, but there was an effort to kill off the Hmong language and culture. And so to escape enslavement, many, many Hmong people fled into the high mountains. In Laos, we lived for 100, 200 years in peace. And then the French came and they wanted tax. And so we had to, because we were a people without a currency, we had to, and we were predominantly farmers, they asked for opium. So when you look up Hmong history, it's often linked with opium. Very few people understand that those roots are tied to colonialism. Mm-hmm. But when the Americans came, because the war was so unpopular here, and the history I'm talking about is not so different than what is going on in the world right now. You know, all of us understand that we live in a world rampant with war. The stories are ending by the second. You know, that we live in a world that is creating more and more refugees by the minute. And so the Hmong became a refugee population. That's why I was born in the refugee camps of Thailand. As a child, I used to ask my dad, is all of the world a refugee camp? I could see that people could leave, but Hmong people couldn't. We couldn't. We got food 3 days a week, and we were expected to wait out the years. And my father, with his poet's heart, took me to the tallest tree in the camp, held me in his arms, and he said, look, Menai, one day your feet will walk on the horizons your father has never seen. July 27, 1987, my family was resettled in Minnesota. And this part of the story will be really interesting because Tia will tell you how her family is resettled here in Washington. Mm-hmm. But we were resettled in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mom and Dad had two girls. My mother had six miscarriages after us. Wow. Because every time we looked at her, she gave us the food in her hands, the food in her mouth. So all these little boys, big enough so the adults could know they were little boys, couldn't come down to life with us. So it was my older sister and me that they took to America with their big dreams that we might one day be the captains of a more beautiful future. Mm-hmm. In St. Paul, Minnesota, we grew up in the St. Paul Public Schools. I ended up going to Carleton College and then Columbia University in New York City to become a writer. And a question that I get very often is, why would you, because the Hmong are so new to what is written, because a long time ago our written language had been outlawed, Hmong women and girls are known internationally for our embroidery, our intricate needlework. Mm. Very few people know the desperation that led to that. They were trying to preserve the written language. Now, for me and Tia, it is a generation's lost in beauty. We see flowers, we see designs, we see traces of our history and the realities, but we're not reading them. Mm. And so I'm 22 years old. I think I'm going to become a doctor because everybody, generations of immigrants and refugees say that you need doctors and lawyers to survive in America. Mm-hmm. Lawyers protect the rights that we've never had enough of. Doctors heal what is broken in the human body. My older sister said she'd be a lawyer, so then by default, I would become the doctor. But in my senior year of college, my grandmother fell, and I went to her, and I said, get up. And she says to me, you have to understand that there were people who loved me before you. Before you, I had a mom and a dad, brothers and sisters, your grandfather, my most precious baby girl. They're all waiting for me. Mm-hmm. It would be selfish of you to cry for me to stay. So I cried for her leaving. But Grandma's biggest fear was that she would be forgotten, Frederica. She couldn't read or write. She had never been to school. All of her life, she signed her name, Zhuo Li, with a shaky X. Mm-hmm. And so I became a writer in the hopes that the world might remember her along with me. People say, why are you a writer? Because I was loved, because I love in return. Because I know that if I'm lucky enough to one day become an old woman, that perhaps my memories will grow wings and will start flying far away. But if the world anchors me to what makes me Hmong, if the world anchors me to the reason why I exist, then maybe we will be okay. So that is a bit of my history and my story and how I got here to this place in time. And Tia, your family story is interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of that, Kalia. It's really beautiful to hear everything that you have to share. I actually learned from your book, The Late Homecomer, about the sort of resistance movement that Hmong women were part of in China. I feel like it was so beautiful that our Hmong women, because we weren't able to speak our own language, like the Chinese would cut off Hmong people's tongues sometimes if we spoke our own language. So I think that it was really fascinating to learn from your book the fact that Hmong women sewed our language and our stories into the bandao, the story cloth, so that we could keep passing down those stories in our language through the generations. So I want to thank you for that, and it inspired me to try and learn more about our Hmong culture too. With your question, when you ask who are the Hmong, I think of Hmong as fighters. I think that when I think of Hmong people, I believe the word fighter comes up in my mind in the ways of just fighting through all of this oppression and all of the efforts to eliminate us through genocide. We're still here. We're still existing. We're still fighting for to keep our culture alive, to keep our family stories alive, to keep our language alive. And I think we are so adaptive, and that's what I really admire about our Hmong culture. There's such a big diaspora. There's Hmong all over the world, you know, after the secret war in Laos. You know, my parents ended up in the U.S. There were so many Hmong that went to France, to Australia, to Canada. And my parents, I remember I interviewed my mom for a college project when I was at Gonzaga University about my family's immigration story. And it was really, really fascinating to learn so much about her immigration story that I had never heard before. And I remember she told me that as her family was fleeing Laos to go across the Mekong River into Thailand to seek refuge in the Thai refugee camps, then they had to hide at the bottom of a boat. So her and like 8 family members hid at the bottom of this boat. They paid this Lao man to help transport them across the Mekong River, which is so just incredibly dangerous and so incredibly brave at the same time. They had to go at night, and once they were stopped by a communist soldier, and luckily all they saw, because my family was covered by a tarp and covered with corn, like corn is just all on top of them, so it looks like he's just transporting some produce, then luckily they were able to make it safely across to the Thai refugee camps. And my whole life growing up, when I heard they were in Thai refugee camps, I thought, oh, like, must have been really nice, like safety. Until she told me, like, no, actually the guns from the Thai soldiers weren't pointed outwards to protect us. They were pointed inwards to keep us in there. And so it just really shifted my perspective a lot when I heard about that story and heard about the fact that Hmong, we were pushed out of so many places. You know, we weren't really welcome in sometimes anywhere, it felt like. And so I think that just the fact that we are able to still keep our culture alive, keep our traditions alive, keep stories alive through your work, Leah, and through so many other folks. It's just really incredible. So my mom, she ended up getting sponsored by a Presbyterian family, and she and her family, they ended up in Seattle. And then my dad, he and his family ended up in Missoula, Montana, and they ended up actually meeting right in the middle here in Spokane, Washington. So I think what motivates me a lot in my life, why I get up in the morning, why I do the advocacy work I do, is remembering that legacy of my grandparents, my great-grandparents, all the ancestors before me. And I just channel that strength, knowing how they had to flee a war. Many were soldiers too. My grandpa was Senator Puatan Muasu, and so he was the first Hmong senator of the Huapan province. And just like learning about the legacy of leadership within my family, and just the legacy of leadership within Hmong people in general, it just inspires me to want to just take that great powerful strength that they had within them, that courage and that resilience, and then use that and push that forward so that we can help make a difference here in our American society now, in our home here.
You were born here.
Yeah, I was born and raised here in Spokane, Washington. So this was the only home I knew for so long. Of course, did some travels, and that's actually why last year during my senior year of college at Gonzaga University, I was really called to study abroad in Thailand. I wanted to learn more about my home culture. Sadly, they didn't have a program offered in Laos, so Thailand was the next closest thing where I knew I could learn about our Hmong culture. And luckily, I was able to learn about Hmong and a lot of other minority groups in Thailand through our Highland Ethnic Peoples of Northern Thailand and Social Relations class. Very long title, but I'm really, really grateful that I was able to meet a lot of Hmong at the markets. And I remember we did a great, great sunrise hike. Our whole study abroad group, we did this at Doi Inthanon National Park. And so we had to get up at like 4 a.m. We bus to the top in these rodangs, these red trucks with no seatbelts. You know, they're all open. You feel the cold air just on your face as you're going up this huge, huge mountain. And then as we watched the sunrise, it was just so stunning. And I remember then we started, so we drove to the top of the mountain to see a viewing point, but then you can climb up even more to like see some waterfalls and just other beautiful viewpoints. And I remember I met some amazing Hmong tour guides there. All the tour guides were Hmong because, you know, we're mostly up in the mountains. And I remember they were a bit older. They were Hmong elders. And I was like, oh, like I saw their clothes and I knew instantly because of that embroidery, like you were talking about. I was like, oh, that's our people. Like, it's so cool to be able to recognize each other, even though we're from different countries, you know, just being able to be like, oh, like, I feel at home because I know you're Hmong too. So they were like totally schooling us. They were lapping us with their strength going up the mountain. Yeah, it was just really, really cool to be like, oh, Nyashonga, and like, hello, and Nyashong Pao, like, hello, auntie. And they were just super, super welcoming and calling me Minsai, my daughter, and just really, really sweet.
So we are people without a country, but somehow we remain intact as a people. And I think that is such a dangerous dangerous proposition for people who are cultivating a love of nation states, mm-hmm. the importance mm-hmm. of boundaries and barriers, mm-hmm. Because the fact that you can exist as a people all over the world is a dangerous reality for certain figures.
I think, yeah, that's an interesting point to bring up. It certainly contrasts our modern idea of like the nation state, and especially in today's day and age of this resurgence of kind of nationalism and as you've mentioned before, just a lot of conflict in general. I mean, it seems like the U.S. is, if we're talking about the United States, we've been kind of perpetually in some way, shape or form in conflict since 1945 consistently, or since, you know, since World War II. So, you know, we could go on a whole tangent about that, but that is, you know, that's a beautiful point. You know, that there are so many other things that make a people, a community, a thing that, you know, doesn't have to do with physical boundaries and borders and like control it. That this what comes to mind to me is like this the concept of like domination and control of land, of borders, etc. Thank you both for sharing your beautiful stories and the stories of your families. I mean, my gosh, you know what journeys both of your families undertook to get here. And you know, in Kalia, you were actually, you could say you remembered coming to the United States. You know, I wanted to actually just bring, but something stuck out to me when you were just introducing yourself, your story about not being able to say the ABCs. That actually kind of brought up something from my own childhood. I moved here from another country. Well, I'm an American citizen, but I'm a dual citizen of Italy. And when I moved to the United States, I didn't speak very much English. It was just me and my mom. My dad is Italian. He still lives in Italy. But so my full name is Federica. Whereas the English pronunciation is Federica, but I honestly don't really like that. I think it sounds like a bridge troll, but
just like embrace it for sure. And I hope that, I mean, I love when, you know, people are just like, hey, this is my name, please call me by this, you know. I think it's sad in American society. It's like often with our, you know, Hmong culture and other Asians, I feel like we have to like Americanize our names so much. Yes. And people like, they're like, oh, that's too hard to pronounce. Can I call you this instead? Like my sister, her name is Gaoshua. Somebody once called her Joshua. They're like, can I just call you Joshua instead? That's just a lot easier for me. And so it's like, I think in our Hmong culture, especially because our names are so precious, like I was named after my paternal grandmother, Tia Tao, who she lives with us still, which is great. But I think it's just, it's special and important to call people by their names, right?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's something I haven't really like reflected on in my personal experience much until recently. But I actually can remember when I was in third grade when I came to the United States. I'd finished third grade in Italy, but they decided because of my language proficiency, I would need to repeat the third grade. And I remember this one day walking into my class, and, you know, we had these little, your little desk that opens up, mm-hmm. and we have our names written on top of each of our desks. And I remember one day coming in, and on the top of my desk was written Ricky. And I was like, Ricky? And then literally I found out one of my, the teacher's assistant decided my name was too hard to pronounce so that they my nickname would be Ricky.
Oh.
Like, didn't even ask me. I didn't reflect on that for a long time, but now it's, I was like, that was really messed up, man. My mom was having none of it. She was, no, you're not doing this. So thankfully, Mama came in, but. Yeah, I can kind of relate on that level, like feeling like, I think just as a foreigner in general, feeling like the aspects that make you different, like, you know, your name, are an inconvenience to people.
Yes.
And it's really something I started to reflect on a lot.
I think so many of us have, you know, who come from different languages or different cultures, we have identity crisis because of this reality. In America, that is not give enough attention, pay enough attention to try to understand. You know, this is a country that is so concerned with right or wrong that what should really, you know, the essence of a good writer, and I'm speaking here as a writer, is that you deepen the understanding of others. It isn't to garner agreement or disagreement.
Yeah.
Yeah, but fully listening and calling people Frederica, what they want to be called, what they want to be known as, should be foundational.
Yeah, I agree. It's like I can understand, like, if we're going back to the name thing, like I understand my name is hard for Americans to pronounce, but at least I can give them. I should make people try, like let them try first, and then
yes, definitely.
I thought we'd connect on that point, and especially when, like, as you were saying, your name is like such an important part of your sense identity and heritage. I'm curious to know, you know, since you both came to the United States, well, no, you were born, Tia, you were born in the United States.
Yes.
Your families came at slightly different times, and you were resettled in different parts of the United States, and you lived in Minneapolis, well, St. Paul technically, but which I'm familiar with. That's where my husband is from, so I've spend a lot of time in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Are there differences, like, in your guys' experiences living here in Spokane versus, like, a city like Minnesota and St. Paul?
You know, as a writer lucky enough to have traveled to all of the, like, the Hmong resettlements across the country. So California has the biggest population. The Twin Cities has the highest concentration. And I think that explains why so many emergent political leaders or artists like myself come from the Twin Cities. It's a huge concentration of Hmongness. Mm. Wisconsin has the third. North Carolina has the fourth. Here, I think, has fewer people than that. Mm-hmm. But having had the honor and the privilege of visiting all these communities, especially after 40, 50 years in America, you can see the regional differences. Down south, they make a mean pie. All kinds of mean pies, and they now speak with Southern accents.
That's so cool.
And what I have always thought was perhaps a Hmong accent. I met one of the foremost Hmong linguists in the world, and she said, no, you actually speak with a Midwestern accent. Mm. You know, and then here meeting Tia, and, you know, I mean, there are regional differences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand that wherever we are, though, we're at the bedrock of farming. So farmers markets in the Twin Cities, most of them are Hmong farmers. In France, most of the vegetables come from Hmong farmers in southern France. In Nice, Same with Thailand. They come from Chiang Mai. And so everywhere we are, we're like the bedrock of farming. It is what we've always done and what so many of our elders are good at. And then now there's me, and the Tia's even younger. We are less good at these things.
Yeah.
And so we're tending different gardens.
Yeah, my grandparents are actually flower farmers in Monroe, so the Seattle area. And they sell every week at Pike Place Market. And then they also sell from their house as well. And I have lots of relatives that sell flowers all around different areas of Seattle. So I really am grateful for and just appreciate the fact that I grew up around the farms. Even though I was, you know, 5 hours away from them, I always look forward to visiting them, especially in the summertime when I can go to their gorgeous, like, 10-acre flower farm and see all the beautiful, just amazing varieties of flowers like gladiolas, dahlias, sunflowers, zinnias. And it's a really big bonding time that I can, like, have with my grandparents. Honestly, I feel like because there is that language barrier, unfortunately, with me not really speaking much Hmong, but they speak English and Hmong, so sometimes, like, there is that language barrier, and I think that, like, it's really, really nice to just be farming with them, because that's our sort of love language with each other. Like, me helping them with farming, it's my way of saying, like, hey, I really love you, I want to help support the work that you do. And it's really, really fun just selling at Pike Place Market, making all these bouquets for so many different folks, especially because a lot of tourists come through Pike Place Market in Seattle. So you meet amazing people from all over the world. And it's just really, really fun making those bouquets and hearing the stories of why people want the bouquets too, like what certain occasions, whether that's for a wedding, for a birthday. It's just really, really special to be able to see people's smiling faces. And I'm really, really grateful for my grandparents for, you know, continuing that, even though they're old and they're slowly, you know, stopping doing that and passing it on to my Auntie C and my Uncle Joe in the Seattle area, who do fresh flowers, and they sell dried flowers too. But it's just a really special way to, like, keep our traditions alive, our culture alive. I feel like through farming, I feel a lot more connected to my identity and, like, my ancestors and my family when I'm farming with them. So yeah, I love that.
It's beautiful. Speaking of, like, traditions, like, what are your guys' favorite Hmong traditions?
You know, I am a big fan of, I love Hmong food.
Mm-hmm.
And I love pho and khapong.
Yes.
I love zhuan rai boa. I love Hmong food, and oftentimes you can't find Hmong restaurants, but a lot of Hmong or Thai restaurants are actually owned by Hmong people across the country. Mm. You just have to ask and say, hey, I'm Hmong. And they'll say, oh, especially in Wisconsin.
And really?
They'll say, yeah, they'll say, like, oh, we're Hmong too. And then you can say, can I just have some lime bwan rong jua? You know, so you can special order things like that. It's really neat. So beyond the food, though, what I really love is gutia Hmong, traditional Hmong song poetry. My father is a practitioner. He learned at the feet of his elders many, many years ago. And I think it's such a lovely, lovely way to engage with our history, but also with our possibilities as a people. Mm. You know, he sings, there's no instrumentation. You usually sing outside. The birds and the wind, like the wind and the insects, that's your accompaniment. Mm. And if you're good at it, then others will weep with you. If you're good at it, then others will laugh with you. If you're good at it, then others will remember with you. And I think for me, people say, where did you learn how to become a writer? And it's easy to say the workshops at Columbia University, but the truth is that long before I went to school, I saw stories being told by my Uncle Chu on the stretch of his arms in the camps. He'd say, every piece of hair on my arm, and I, that is a tree. My knuckles, these are the mountains. My veins, these are the rivers of my youth.
Wow.
The whole of the world arise on that arm. And every year, year by year, that arm gets weaker and weaker. The skin moves further and further away from the bone. And I can see the fragility of what is underneath.
Mm.
So much of what I do, I think, is an effort to preserve the great oral tradition that we come from.
Gosh, yeah. I was just thinking, like, as you were speaking earlier, like, you just have this beautiful poetic way of storytelling. And I was wondering, you know, where that came from. And is that...
I think so. I'm the daughter of a song poet. You know, my dad, when we were younger, we never had any money to go on vacations. But whenever he put us into the car and we drive across state lines, he'd say, "Minai, what does the fast-speeding train want to say to the long-flowing river?" And so with a kind of training like that, I think you approach the world with a different kind of sensibility. But when I graduated from Columbia, nobody knew what I was doing there or what the MFA program was. My uncle Ang said to me, do you even know what a story is? And I said to him, something with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And he shook his head and he said, no. You have to understand that every story is a stop sign on the road of life. Its purpose is to make you pause, check the trajectory of the horizon before you continue. I'll never read that in a book, Federica. I the only place is home.
Wow, that's so beautiful.
I want to write that quote down. That was so... can you say it one more time?
Yeah, that the purpose... that a story is the stop sign on the road of life. That its purpose is to make you pause, check the trajectory of the horizon before you continue.
Wow, that's... I think we're going to take a quick break, and it's perfect timing for that. Just take a couple minutes to sit and stew on that, because that's such a, I think, a beautiful message. I want to unpack that a little bit. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
A beautiful poetic mind. I wish I had a mind like that. I'm a different kind of writer, but I think this is a good moment to just take a little quick break, and I'll have a quick underwriting announcement before we hop back on. But yeah, don't go too far. We'll be right back. She my pride and joy. She my sweet little baby. I'm my little lover boy. We'll be right back.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for May 16th to the 21st. Thursday, Christy Lee at Arborcrest, the Aspen Kai Band at Brickwest Plaza, and The Rub at Zola. Friday, the Rock Club Spring Showcase at the Big Dipper, Deb the Wolf at Zola, Polly O'Keary and the Rhythm Method at the Bullhead, Carly Fairbanks at the Baby Bar, Bologna at the Chameleon, and Troubadour and Bristol at Zola. Saturday, Working Spliffs at Chan's Red Dragon, Justin Priest at the Bullhead, Brittany Jean at Zola, the Bettys, Gorilla Rabbit and Chicken, and others at Smickland, and The Last Rebel at the District. Sunday, the Spokane String Quartet at the Bing, Spokane is Dead at Zola, and Age of Nephilim at the Big Dipper. Monday, open mic at the Red Room. Monday and Tuesday, open jam at Jackson Street. Tuesday, Jerry Lee in the Groove and Nick Cedar at Zola, Carly Osika at the Junkyard, and Uh-Oh and the O-Wells, Mama Llama, and others at the Big Dipper. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 81 and 92.3 FM. It's Federica back on the air. Welcome back. Oh, I forgot I turned both mics off. Hopefully you could hear that. It's Federica and Stella on the show. So did you hear back from our break? And we're here with Tia and Kalia continuing our conversation. Kalia, you left us off with a really beautiful quote. I'm going to have to write that down. Like, make a printout of it, put it up my desk, like look at it every day. Yeah, this is so inspirational. You have a lot of inspirational things to say, so
thank you. I feel very lucky that, you know, that I've been raised in such a rich oral tradition.
And so, you know, oh gosh, this always happens. We start running low on time because we're just so like deep in the conversation, and there's so many things to say. I was wondering, like, now that you are here in Spokane, I wanted first I want to like shout out your book a little bit, The Rock in My Throat, and I'll leave it to you to talk a little bit about what it's about, and then Tia, you can kind of share about what the literature event that we have going on this weekend and how you can find out more information about what it's all about.
So I grew up as a selective mute in English. When we came, I was learning it fine. I actually fell in love with the language because Hmong is such a tonal language. Every breath I breathe into the world carries meaning. English, every word is like an island. There are seas in between. You know, you first learn how to write by putting your finger in between each word, and the same is true of the spoken form. But when I was 7, my mom and I went to Kmart, and my mother, who was then very young, 25, and I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world because she had no wrinkles. That was my standard for beauty then. And my mother, who was incredibly brave, because my father said they had grown up in Sien Quang province, which is the most heavily bombed province of Laos. Mm-hmm. Every 7 minutes, American ordnances were raining down. And my dad, he used to say that my mom would walk her chin parallel to the ground even when old men and women were running. That she was the bravest person he'd ever seen. And that's why he fell in love with her. When I was born in the camps, because my mother had so many miscarriages, every time somebody would say, "This is it. This is it. Too much blood lost. She can't get up again." But all of those mornings when I looked toward the rectangular of a door for my mother's figure reaching for me, she came, Frederica, time and time again, she came for me. And so I came to America with an idea that I did not only belong to the most beautiful woman in the world, but that she was also among the bravest. But we were at Kmart, and my mother goes up, and the light bulbs in the bathroom have started flickering. So she's trying to ask for light bulbs, but she doesn't know the word. My mother points to the ceiling, and she says, "I'm looking for the thing that makes the world shiny." But my mother has a thick accent, and every time she stumbles, the clerk taps her hand on the counter faster and faster and faster. First time I heard a ticking clock, and then the clerk walked away, and we waited for her to come back, but 15 minutes passed on the round clock on the white wall. Nobody came back, and I looked up, and my mother, her chin was bowed. And I knew that she was ashamed. She was ashamed that I had seen that interaction. She was ashamed to be herself in this world that we now belong to. We came home, and my dad, who had gone to work, he was a machinist in a factory. His supervisor had said to him, "B, you're here to talk to the machines, not to me."
And so I decided that if we lived in a world that did not need to hear my mom and my dad, then surely the world didn't need to hear me either. So the next day I stopped talking at school. It was my great revolution against a language that was not going to hear or try to understand my mom and dad. The rust built up so thick that I could no longer control my voice, and slowly it died inside of me. I didn't talk until I went to college, when a professor said, "It's selfish of you to be here and to absorb knowledge. You're here because one day you're expected to become a producer of it." Then I learned how to whisper then. But one of my editor, Carol Hinn, said, "Would you ever consider writing a book about your selective mutism?" Within an hour, The Rock in My Throat was written, and it comes out essentially the way it was written. And so that book, I hope that it makes so many other mothers like my mother who are stumbling and falling into a language that they feel less alone in the world, no matter where they come from. And that if there are children like me, and I know there are across our schools all around the world, there are children whose voices have died inside, then I want them to know that they are not alone. That sometimes it takes a long time for us to find our voices. And that is okay too. It does not make us any less than. And so that's what The Rock in My Throat is about. And I'll be reading it across the events that will be going on. But I'll also be introducing Where Rivers Part. It is my third in the family trilogy. I wrote The Late Homecomer about my grandmother, The Song Poet about my father, and this final one, Where Rivers Part, is about my mother's life. She was 16 years old when she met my dad in the jungles of Laos. When they took a walk that led into marriage, the 10,000 North Vietnamese and Pathet Lao soldiers came in between. My mother thought she would visit her mother again, so she didn't say goodbye. She walked away with my father, her mother standing there with a water pail beside her. 16 years of love has had to last a lifetime through. And so in this book, Where Rivers Part, I take my mother back to that jungle in Laos, where I know the ghost of her mother waits for her, the water pail at her side, arms wide spread to hold Jumua, my mother, close, the woman who loves her more than any other in the world. So I will be introducing these two books to the Spokane community this weekend.
Wonderful. Wow, that makes me so emotional. I know. I'm really, really excited to read your new memoir.
Thank you.
I loved The Late Homecomer. Highly recommend it to whoever's listening. Please go read it. Yeah. Go order it right now.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. I'm like getting emotional listening to you. I can tell, and it's amazing to see your journey from, you know, what you're telling me with, you know, struggling to find your voice and seeing where you are now. You have a very impactful voice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's impressive.
Thank you so much for giving reason for this voice to enter the world. Thank you.
Oh, I'm going to get all like teary eyed. Amazing journey. You have an amazing story to share. And I want to thank you for coming on the air today and sharing that story. I mean, look how far you've come now. You're on the radio and writing books and sharing your story. Very grateful to have you here. Just as we wrap up, Atiyah, if you have any other more information about the events coming up and, anything else, ACL, that people can learn about and where they can find more information about the organization and all the good stuff that's happening there.
Yeah, so we are in the middle of celebrating Asian American Heritage Month throughout May, and so we have a ton of really, really fun events happening this weekend with Kalia Yang and the illustrator Jae-Mae Lin. And so we have the Rock in My Throat Storytelling Workshop. That's tomorrow, Saturday, May 18th at Sparks Central. And then in the evening, right here at the Central Library, we are going to be having a Rock in My Throat evening talk with Kalia and Jae-Mae. And that's a book reading and Q&A. And then on Sunday, May 19th, we're going to be having another story time at Wishing Tree Books and at Auntie's Bookstore. Then on Monday, we have a proclamation reading. So we'll be accepting the Asian American Heritage Month proclamation that we submitted to the City Council. They'll be giving that to us on Monday at City Hall at 6 p.m. And then on Wednesday, May 22nd, at Eastern Washington University, we have an Experiences of Asian Muslims in the United States panel. On Tuesday, May 28th, we have Feeding Ghosts, a graphic memoir book talk. And then we'll be closing up our Asian American Heritage Month events on May 30th from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Garland Theater. And tickets are free. So we'll be having film screenings and a closing reception with some really good food. So please come by. And you can learn more about our upcoming events at aclspokane.org. And you can follow us on social media at ACL Spokane on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. So hope to see you there at some of our Asian American Heritage Month events. And come meet Kalia.
Yeah, yes, I would love to meet all of you.
Thank you guys so much for being on the air today with me and Stella. It's been such a pleasure having you guys and for sharing your stories and the information about all the events that are going on this weekend. It's been really a pleasure having you. So seriously, thank you guys. Yeah,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming here and sharing your beautiful stories.
Yeah. Thank you, Stella. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for giving us the space to share. It's really, really an honor. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you have any questions about the show today, or you know, if you have comments to share about the stories you heard, you can always also reach out directly to me at the show at sodidyouhear@kyrs.org via email. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your time. I hope you'll go out this weekend and check out some of these amazing events going on. And until next time, you know, we'll take care and we'll catch you next time.
Yeah, have a good weekend.